all darkness.
I'm a monster.
You're only a monster if you behave like one. Frankenstein must be destroyed.
And welcome to the Flicks Junkies podcast. That right there was actually the trailer for I, Frankenstein, which opened up on Friday. And neither Travis or I saw this movie.
No, if you did see it, please send us a note and tell us how it was. But I don't think either of us have any intention of seeing that film.
No. Both Travis and I were fairly busy this week. And a lot of times when we are busy, we try to make time to go see the films.
Right.
But neither of us made any effort. We'll talk a little bit more about that and also... why January and February is pretty much just a dump for movies for Hollywood these days. We're also going to get into Oscar snubs. Been talking a lot about the Academy Awards. We're going to talk a little bit about what we feel should have been nominated but missed the cut this year. Going to talk about a new little tidbit about the Star Wars franchise and Disney that's pretty interesting that you guys will probably get into. And it comes down to, is one of these going to be done by Pixar, an animated film, which... I know Travis is really excited to talk about.
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely interested to talk about it. I'm not entirely sure.
I can see it in his eyes.
The project.
We also, unfortunately, we're missing Matt Glade today. Again, maybe I should introduce myself. Hello, my name is John Clyde, co-host the Flicks Junkies podcast with Travis Poppleton,
and usually with Matt Glade,
who's out today. But we still have a Redbox pick from Matt Glade, as we do picks every week. We got a Amazon pick from Travis and a Netflix pick, and we also have a retro review that we're super excited about. This is kind of one of those films, to me at least, that made me like, oh man, I want to make movies when I grow up. And when I watch it today, I think, oh man, I want to make movies when I grow up.
Aged very well, yes.
Still kind of the same way. So, but let's jump into it right here, Travis. Let's go back to I, Frankenstein. It is January and especially February are notorious for just terrible movies coming out in these months. And, you know, to give you an idea, this year is no different. I mean, we have movies like, and I'm sorry if you people are really excited about some of these. I guess we just see things differently. But I mean, the Vampire Academy, which is a YA novel where they're trying to, you know, get on the... you know, ride the coattails of Twilight and all those, and it looks so bad.
The coattails for Twilight were a couple years ago. I mean, anyone's still throwing vampire in. Vampires are cool about every 10 years, mm-hmm. and then they just fall off, and we're in that fall-off time, so please stop writing about vampires, people.
That looks bad. Yeah. We have the RoboCop reboot, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, it's so funny, because I remember as a kid watching RoboCop, which, as a kid, I should not have been watching RoboCop. But I remember watching it, and the main thing that stuck out to me is Detroit seems like the worst place in the world. That's the main thing that stuck out to me. But later on, as I watched it again, I thought to myself, I'm like, it's kind of nostalgic fun, but this movie isn't very good.
Right.
And here we are doing it again.
Yeah, I do have hope for RoboCop, but look, not much hope. I kind of hope it proves people wrong, even though it's in a February slot. I like Michael Keaton. I like Samuel L. Jackson. I really, from the trailers, the guy who's playing RoboCop looks especially terrible. I need to look up who that is. But I would like to see Michael Keaton make a comeback of some sort. I think he's a much more talented actor than his latest resume is giving him credit for.
I love Michael Keaton. I think Michael Keaton is at his best when he gets to be a little bit more fun with the role. Loved Michael Keaton in The Other Guys with Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg, but I digress. I don't know, RoboCop to me, I'm not seeing the appeal in it right now. If Travis tells me that I need to go see it because it's just stupid fun, I'll probably check it out, but as of right now, I'm not.
I'm sorry, it's Joel Kinnaman. I said, what's his name? But I want to have the official list of actors who will never, ever come on our show because we've insulted them. So we do need to get his name.
Yeah, we do have a board up here behind us that's actors that will not come on the show, and he's one of them. And unfortunately, I think I offended Tom Cruise a few weeks ago. So
yeah, he's not coming on.
I'm trying to make up for that one because he was probably going to be a guest list here.
Yeah, man, Joel, I think, yeah.
Yeah. Another one coming out during those months is the new Kevin Costner film, 3 Days to Kill. And basically what it is I think Kevin Costner is like, oh, hey, Liam Neeson's an older guy, and he's able to become an action star again. Like, I'm going to jump on that bandwagon. And this movie looks bad.
It does. I don't know why he thought now's the time to become an action star, but I will say he gets a lot of grief for his Robin Hood movie, and I actually really enjoyed his Robin Hood
movie. Was fun. I mean, I know that apparently Robin Hood sounds like he's from Nebraska now and not from merry old England, but something that got me with this 3 Days to Kill, gosh, just watching it and listening to some of the dialogue and everything, and I don't know, just when he goes to the back of the trunk and he punches the guy in the face, and he's like, quiet, I'm trying to have a conversation with my daughter. I was like, this is going to be a long 90 minutes.
He has gone into like this stage where everyone thought, oh, Kevin Costner, and he was kind of becoming a punchline.
Yeah.
But then in Man of Steel, I was like, oh.
He was so good in that.
Yeah, so maybe he's making his comeback, but this isn't it.
This is not the comeback he wants to be a part of. So that's coming out. And then also in February, late February, we have Taken 3. All right, it's called Nonstop, but it may as well be Taken 3. Taken 3 colon Airborne.
Yeah.
I think that's what it should be called. It's Liam Neeson. He's on a plane. The plane gets hijacked, and Liam Neeson does what Liam Neeson now does and kicks the crap out of wolves and Russians. I think that's what Liam Neeson does these days.
Did you like The Gray? I mean, this other film's not worth talking about, but let's go to The Gray really
quick. I actually like The Gray.
Yeah.
I actually feel that we could have an entire discussion on The Gray and how it's not just a movie about wolves and dudes fighting wolves.
Might have to do that one day.
It's actually, if you break it down a bit more and get way too complicated with it, and if Joe Carnahan heard this, the director of The Gray, and heard my breakdown of what I believe The Gray is, he'd probably be like, this guy's nuts.
Right. Sometimes I get accused of overthinking films. And, John, I'm not saying you're wrong at all, but let me just tell you, I watched The Gray as a bunch of guys fighting wolves. So, and it's a hard movie to watch. Like, it's not one of those, hey, can't wait to watch The Gray again.
With this, I just want to bring this up really quick. A friend of mine was asking the other day, why are there all these terrible movies in January and March? Like, why – or February, sorry, January and February.
And March.
March a little. March, usually towards the end of March, is when you start getting the first of the summer flicks.
Yeah.
Usually. Anyway. Right. And he was asking me, why are all these bad movies? And I told him, I was like, well, what usually happens is studios, when they have a film that they've put some time into, they've put some money into, and realize that this isn't that great, they usually pick this month to just kind of dump it there. And he asked why, and I said, well, usually they're lower income months for the studios. But he brought up a good point. He's like, well, is it not a chicken and the egg thing? Like, were they just lower months and so they dumped them there, or did they become lower months because that's where they were dumping them?
Well, I think you have your kids in school, and it's not just, you know, when kids are first going back to school, they're still adjusting. At this point, people are really into their system, mm-hmm. and you really only have Friday and Saturday, maybe Sunday. So I don't know. It's probably a little bit of both, but this is just such a terrible time.
I'd have to look at it historically, but my take is that it was lower historically, not necessarily as low as it is now, but I think it was lower historically. So when they started dumping this stuff in there, it just dropped like crazy.
But it's unfortunate because it's the perfect storm for James Cameron, who comes in and releases a big budget movie in December that is not really that good.
No.
But it's so much better than the movies in January and February, and he just rides that to the top of the charts every single time.
Yeah. Somebody else who's never going to be on the show, James Cameron, because I hear he's really sensitive anyway. But I will say with these troubled months right now, there usually are one or two gems that always come out of this. For example, a few years ago, it's funny to even call it a gem, but a movie that took everybody off guard that was just supposed to be a throwaway film, but people enjoyed it, and I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun, was Taken the first time.
Right.
The first go around.
But let's talk about that, because Taken was a fine action flick that would have got hammered had it been released in the summer.
Exactly, and it would have. And that's the thing is, again, marketing. They took advantage of a terrible time and threw
An okay movie
in there. But a couple that are coming out this year in February.
But before we do that,
No,
on the whole gray thing. Before we do that, this year I think was different because we had some of those movies that bled into, like Mud and Zero Dark Thirty.
Right.
That ended up in the January, February months by almost by mistake, really.
Yeah.
they had like limited release before, but then were technically 2013 movies. And to say that those could have been released any time of the year and they would have still been amazing.
Well,
movies.
One of those that did that this year already was Lone Survivor, which is doing very well. Critically, it's doing well. With the audiences, it's doing fantastic. But that was a movie that had a limited release in December and then had its wide release in January. It kind of bled over. And one that's interesting about this year is The Monuments Men, because it's kind of an anomaly. It's a film that they were looking at, you know, really pushing for awards season, supposed to be this great movie, huge cast, and it's in February.
Right.
Which seems bizarre, but there's actually a reason behind this.
There is?
Yeah.
Oh, please tell me. I was just about to ask. Like, I would love to know why it got pushed back.
So this film is directed by George Clooney and produced by he and his producing partner, Grant Heslov. The film is supposed to come out in December. They wanted to do it as an awards push for this year. But what happened is Clooney just said, you know what? I can put it out in December, but it's not going to be the finished film that I want to make. And George Clooney has enough pull with the studio that they're just like, okay, we'll give you more time. And so to him, to get the movie where he wanted it, to have it edited, put together exactly where he wanted it, he needed more time.
If this comes out in February and makes awards for 2014, or for this year anyway, for I guess it would be 2015 awards season, but that would be incredible because that never happens.
No, it's hard. It's really hard to make that happen because – which is too bad because sometimes some great movies can come out, but it's been so long that you almost forget that they were there at the first of the year. And then at the end of the year, you have this huge awards push and just thrown at everybody's face. This year is a perfect example of that awards push at the end of the year.
Absolutely.
Because all the film – not all the films, but the big films that you're really talking about – The Wolf of Wall Street, American Hustle, 12 Years a Slave, everything was released right there at the end of the year.
And that really started with Captain Phillips, I think. That was like the beginning of the push.
And that way it's fresh on everybody's mind when it's coming out and stuff. So The Monuments Men is coming out that I know both Travis and I are really looking forward to, which is a February film. And then another one that I think is totally Warner Brothers taking advantage of the market that there aren't very good movies right now, because this is a movie to me that could have been released like early April right there at the front of summer movies and still do pretty well, but that's The Lego Movie.
That this is an interesting time to put it out. Like, I think this is almost experimental because, like I said, your kids are in school and you only have the weekends unless you're going for four and under.
Yeah.
So I'll be curious to see how well it does. What's interesting, though, is adults want to see this. It looks genuinely funny. You have a great cast behind it, and who didn't play with Legos? So hopefully there are enough adults who are interested in it that they're taking their kids to it. Hopefully it warrants this kind of attention, but I wonder if it's able to get the money back that it wants when you're mid-school season and you don't have every single day where you can take a child to a matinee.
Yeah, and on top of that, these two movies, which are the ones during this season that Travis and I are most looking forward to, are actually opening up on the same day on February 7th.
Right.
Which will be interesting to see how those two decide to battle it out.
You've got
to
split that, yeah.
Yeah. So let's move on from here. Let's actually, you know what, let's jump into our picks for the week. Let's we'll talk about that, and then afterwards we're going to talk a little bit about the Academy Awards that we've been talking here about. But to kick it off, every week we have a Redbox pick, what you should be watching on Redbox, something you should watch on Netflix streaming, and then also something on Amazon Prime that you should check out. Matt usually does our Redbox, but he's not here this week. So Travis and I actually came up with one together. This is a film that he saw that he was surprised by. It's a film that I saw just last week that actually surprised me how much I enjoyed it, but The Croods.
Oh, right.
Yeah. he was really nervous about what I was about to say.
Yeah, I had no idea.
But yeah, the animated film The Croods, which, first of all, I didn't know how big of a cast this actually had in it. Going into it the whole time, I'm just like, who on earth is that? You know, trying to figure it out. But we've got Nicolas Cage, Ryan Reynolds, Emma Stone, Catherine Keener. There's a lot of different people in this. But it's an animated film. It's a family film. And it was actually a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
I reviewed this film, and I remember I took my daughter to it, and we watched it, and I was genuinely surprised because I expected it to be terrible. And one thing that I try not to do is read the reviews before I write my review, because I don't want to kind of get this peer pressure thing going on. And I did with The Croods, and I was sad that I did because it was getting hammered. Like, it didn't do very well with the critics, and I thought, no, it was a much better film than than what Rotten Tomatoes is saying anyway.
Yeah.
So it was a really fun movie. My daughter loved it. I took my family back again to see it. And I think the surprise for this, because Nicolas Cage gets so much grief these days, and I'll be the first to say I do not believe he deserved an Academy Award. It's one of those sad things that Nicolas Cage has an Academy Award. Put him on our list too. But with the Croods, I thought his voice was perfect for the father.
Yeah.
And I didn't know who it was, and I kept thinking, they just got a really great voice for the guy who's leading this ensemble cast. Why do I not know who it is? And then when it was Nicolas Cage, it was one of those, oh, of course. I mean, it was him, but he was really, really good as the lead of this little ensemble cartoon.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, it's when it comes to family films, at least, I think there's stuff there that the parents are going to enjoy. The kids are obviously going to enjoy it because it's fun. But it's also one of those ones that has like a great message when it comes to family, you know, accepting others, people that are different and stuff like that. I just really enjoyed it. I was surprised by how much I enjoyed it. I was kind of expecting not to really like it that much, to be honest.
And perhaps that's why we enjoyed it. We both went in with low expectations, but
I think at the same time, though, if you've got little ones that you're going to watch with, I think you're going to have a hard time not enjoying it, at least for how much they're going to enjoy it.
I agree with that.
Yeah. A little interesting sidebar as well, which I didn't realize, but John Cleese from Monty Python is actually the one who came up with the story for the Croods, one of the writers.
And, I mean, how do you not like that?
Yeah. So, right?
Yeah.
When I saw that, I was looking at the credits and it said John Cleese. I was like, nah, it can't be the same John Cleese.
But John Cleese?
Sure enough, when I looked up, it was there he was.
Oh, this is a total. All right. Have we gone too far off on this show? I think it's going to be a 3-hour show.
Because we've gone so far off that I don't think it matters where we go at this point.
I just read an interview with Bill Murray who was talking, and who knows how long ago it was, but he was saying the reason he did Garfield is he thought it was the Coen brothers who had done it, but it was actually Joel Cohen.
No way.
And he just saw Cohen and he was like, oh, well, if those guys did it, it'll be pretty good.
Oh,
no. He said he read a couple pages.
Oh, no.
And I was like, okay. And then he saw the film, and according to Bill Murray, he was like, they did a terrible job cutting this together. Like, how did this go awry?
I actually heard that he tried to rewrite the script to make
Bill Murray did?
Bearable. Yeah, and it didn't turn out. And then he says this, you know, to like kind of try to back his way out of it.
Yeah.
But he also decided to be in Garfield 2, A
right.
Tale of Two Kitties.
And that's where he loses some credibility for sure.
Bless his heart. All right, so Redbox this week, The Croods. Let's jump into Netflix. This one's for me. This is a quirky, different, small little film. Travis doesn't necessarily think it's the one that should be on our watch list this week, but it's a film from the comedian Mike Birbiglia called Sleepwalk With Me. And again, it's just a little film. And the thing is if you've never heard Mike Birbiglia's stand-up before, I highly suggest listening to it because it's different than any other stand-up I've ever listened to before. He kind of turns into this storyteller that it's hilarious, but it's probably one of the most poignant things you're ever going to listen to.
He's like, there's another comedian that was a Daily Show writer. I can't remember his name. I'll tell you in a second when it hits me. But it's one of those things where I feel like I'm smiling the whole time. I'm not necessarily laughing, but I'm enjoying myself and I have a big smile on my face. So
yeah, there are moments for me at least where, you know, I'll find myself laughing out loud at a couple of things. But no, it's not like joke followed by joke followed by joke followed by joke,
right?
You know, where you're just crying. But it's funny, but when it's over, you're just like, it almost kind of opens your eyes like, oh my gosh, that was way deeper than I thought it was. And it's really interesting that way. And to me, the film plays out much the same way. I'll let Travis get on his little soapbox about this movie here in a minute. But when I watched it, I enjoyed it. It was different. It was, I don't know, it was kind of a breath of fresh air to me when I checked it out, and it is streaming on Netflix.
I don't want to slam it at all because I can see why people would enjoy it. And I'm a big NPR guy, as I think has come up on the show. This is Ira Glass from This American Life who's behind this. And
that's actually funny because I was going to say it. To me, it has a This American Life type feel where it's funny, but it's very poignant, you know, as it goes through it.
I don't know if this was an entire episode, but basically they just played his stand-up one day on This American Life.
Oh, really?
And that's where I first heard it. So when I heard that they were coming out with this movie, pretty religious about listening to This American Life. I was like, oh, I remember that episode. I enjoyed that episode. I would like to see more Like, what happened next, you know? Mm-hmm. And when the story was exactly that story and ended right when I kind of was like, so what happened next? That was the end of the film. So I didn't dislike it. I would not discourage anyone from seeing it. I would discourage anyone from listening to the stand-up first and then and going from there.
And that's what Travis and I were talking about this a little bit earlier. I had not listened to his stand-up show, Sleepwalk With Me. It's called the exact same thing. I had not listened to it, and I saw the movie. And so I really enjoyed the movie. And then when actually I went back and listened to the stand-up, I enjoyed the stand-up that much more because all of a sudden it's almost like I had this insight to it already.
Right.
You know? And it wasn't that – like it was boring because I'm hearing the same jokes, because definitely some of the same jokes are in there. But – the story told in the film and the story that he tells on stage differs quite a bit still, actually.
Yeah, I think one thing to its credit and one thing I did enjoy, and you touched on it briefly, was kind of how he went from the terrible comedian that he was to the comedian that people embraced, which was he kind of just opened up his heart and gave it to the audience to do what they wanted with. So that journey of trying to discover what kind of stand-up comedian he was going to be, that was more compelling to me, again, just because I already knew the story and was hoping for these other details.
Yeah, and I need to double check, but I'm pretty sure that, well, Sleepwalk With Me is on Netflix, but also from Mike Birbiglia, because I know I've watched it on Netflix. I just need to make sure that it's still on there. But his stand-up, My Girlfriend's Boyfriend is on there. And it's very much the same kind of tone, feel. And again, I mean, I kind of ended up walking away from it just like, this was brilliant, you know? It's just, I'm way too into it, like way too excited about it.
If you listen to This American Life, you probably have heard most of his material, at least from those two. But if you have not, he's perfect for you. Like, he's just that kind of comedian.
There we go. Okay, if you look up My Girlfriend's Boyfriend in Netflix, you're going to get a movie with Alyssa Milano. That is not what I'm talking about. If you put in Mike Birbiglia, My Girlfriend's Boyfriend, then you'll get his, and it is streaming. And same kind of thing. If you've never seen anything from Mike Birbiglia, at least check it out and see what you think. I could even say try to watch his stand-up, My Girlfriend's Boyfriend, and if you like that kind of a feel, then there's no reason you shouldn't enjoy the movie.
Dimitri Martin.
Dimitri Martin.
That was the other comedian I was thinking. They're not even very similar, but he's the kind of guy I watch and smile.
It's
and
a I'm totally not different humor.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Totally. All right, so my pick of the week for Netflix, Sleepwalk With Me, Mike Birbiglia. Check it out. Let me know what you think. I mean, that's one of those movies where I want to know what people think, because it's definitely a different film.
Yeah.
So, all right, Travis with our Amazon Prime pick this week.
We just had a new Jack Ryan movie hit the theater. So I thought in honor of that we would do Clear and Present Danger, which is streaming on Amazon Prime. I'm not sure if it's on Netflix.
I don't believe it is.
So
I'll double check.
But we're talking the Jack Ryan series. I think this is kind of like a smaller James Bond. There are different actors that continue to take over the role of Jack Ryan. The first one was the best. In a lot of ways, we mirror James Bond with this. But of the three movies that Harrison Ford did as Jack Ryan, I'm not going to say Clear and Present Danger was the best one, but it's the one that I enjoyed the most. It was probably the most fun is not the right word, but I enjoyed it the most. It was
personally, I would put that one in Hunt for Red October pretty close.
Yeah, it's faster paced than
for sure.
Fun is not the right word. I think faster paced is the way to go.
It's a ball.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But of course, Harrison Ford's back. He's in my opinion, he was the best Jack Ryan. William Dafoe was really good in this film. We're talking. I don't know how much you give away. It's basically Jack Ryan against two, and in this time, it's the President of the United States and the drug cartel. Mm-hmm. So the great thing about these films is there's always a lot of political things to examine at the same time. So it's not just the good guy goes and fights the drug cartel. The good guy does go and fight the drug cartel, but you're also seeing a lot of the politicking behind it and why he's there in the first place. And there's a lot more gravity because of the additional things that they put into it. So I enjoy the Jack Ryan series in general. Again, Harrison Ford was the best, and Clear and Present Danger is probably the one that's easiest to watch over and over again.
So I'm going to tell a little story about when I first saw Clear and Present Danger.
Okay.
It was, geez, what year? 94. That's 20 years ago. This came out 20 years ago. Now I'm sidetracked. a friend of mine and I actually went to the theater on a Saturday to go see Airheads.
Which was a terrible movie.
Airheads. That's all I'm going to say. Steve Buscemi, Adam Sandler. Anyway, we went to go see Airheads, and since we're, sheesh, how old was I at this time? Like 13?
Brandon Fraser. You can't forget Brandon Fraser.
Brandon Fraser, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. We want you on the show. I don't want to offend you. Anyway, we went to go see Airheads, and we walked out. We had to call our moms to come pick us up, you know, because it was too far away. And I think it was my mom, and she was stuck at work, and she's like, well, I can't come get you for like an hour. And so we literally, we pulled out all the money between us and counted it up, and we were like, I don't know, like 17 cents short. And we walked around the area outside the theater until we found enough change to make up for it. And we bought tickets to go see Clear and Present Danger right after, while we waited for my mom to come pick us up. And I remember, I don't even remember if Airheads was good or terrible.
No, it was terrible.
Because all I remember is how much I enjoyed Clear and Present Danger right afterwards.
Right.
It is. It's a great movie. If you got Amazon Prime, like I'm thinking about signing up for Amazon Prime so I can watch Clear and Present Danger. It's an awesome film. For some reason, I always remember that moment when they're in Central or South America when everybody gets attacked, like in that alley and stuff, and just how intense that moment was.
Oh, yeah. It's so good. And he does this great stunt, I guess. I would love to see behind the scenes, because Harrison Ford, even at that point, was starting to age.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing some things that look like they hurt quite a bit.
Yeah.
So I wonder if he's, you know, doing some green screen there, but it really looks like he slams into that curb on that.
Oh, that's right. That scene, when it blows up. That's right. It's a great movie. It's a good movie. Patriot Games I enjoyed, but I definitely think this is better than Patriot Games.
I think so.
Hunt for Red October is fantastic. And it's, I don't know. I think as a film, Hunt for Red October is better. And I really like Alec Baldwin, but I think Harrison Ford is so much better that that's what pushes this up for me to rivaling Hunt for Red October is the best Jack Ryan
I just
film.
Realized Harrison Ford did not do Hunt for Red October.
It's Alec Baldwin.
And so I said he did the first three, but you're right, it's Alec Baldwin. Uh-huh. Maybe I was mistaking him for
he only had two
movie.
Turns as Jack Ryan.
So that whole James Bond thing about the original being the best, I take that back. As much as I like Alec Baldwin, Harrison Ford was
I was about to throw you out of this room just immediately.
The light bulb just went on.
Well, and it's funny because out of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Jack Ryan films, Harrison Ford's the only one to do the role more than once.
That's interesting. And did you like any of the others? Because so far, with the exception of Alec Baldwin, I don't have the Ben Affleck hate that most people do, but
no,
I didn't love his take.
I didn't mind Ben Affleck. Chris Pine's not bad. I like Chris Pine, but I kind of feel that, I don't know, this is so messed up to say, you know? But to me, the look isn't quite there right for me.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And maybe it's because I am so ingrained with the Harrison Ford type.
Well, he seems, at least in the original movies, he seems like an older character, mm-hmm. kind of, and I don't even think that's true. I think in the Tom Clancy books, he's younger and he's just getting, you know, acclimated to government.
And that's what this new one is, Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit.
Right. So, but I don't know. I just have this image that it's not, I'm going to go and punch you in the face. It's more of a, you know, it's more of a realistic story and realistic take.
Yeah.
So.
Jack Ryan is not, and this is what's interesting. This one is more of like this spy genre thriller, meaning the new one with Chris Pine, more Jason Bourne type film.
Yeah.
And the Jack Ryan films have always been much more politically charged. You know, he definitely has those moments where like he is the man, you know.
Sure.
But I especially think of The Hunt for Red October. That's more of a film. Instead of like action and him fighting people off, it's like a war of words in a lot of ways to like get people to understand what's going on and everything.
Right,
else.
There's almost no action. And in Clear and Present Danger, most of the action is other people, and he's like being part of it. And I think maybe that's why I like those better, because it is so much easier to say, and then there was a car chase. You know,
yeah.
It's so much easier to just throw in an action scene. And I feel like at least the first three for me were really intelligent films.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, personally, when it comes to those type of films, I thought especially the first three, especially the first and the third Bourne movies were so well done.
Right.
And so enjoyable with that kind of a genre that they kind of like punched it up to this whole new level that's, we can look at it a different way, that when we're getting these kind of copycats, it's kind of like, it wasn't bad, but it was no Bourne movie.
Right, right.
You know? So the new one's not bad. I'm not saying that. It's enjoyable.
Sure.
I'm not going to tell you to run out and spend $12 to go see it.
I think Rotten Tomatoes has nailed it. It's like, what, a 60 or 70%?
Yeah.
And that's pretty reasonable.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I'm there. As much as I like The Hunt for Red October, I may go down as saying that Clear and Present Danger is my personal favorite.
Yeah. I think if you're putting it on paper, Hunt for Red October is probably the best, as far as well-made movies go.
Yeah.
But again, the one that I would watch over and over again is Clear and Present Danger.
Yeah.
And it's on Amazon Prime right now.
Awesome. Well, there you go, our picks for this week. We got The Croods on Redbox, Sleepwalk with Me on Netflix, and Clear and Present Danger there on Amazon Prime. I got to hand it to you, Travis. That was a good one.
Thanks.
That was a good one.
And I don't dislike yours. That's my...
Oh, good. Thank
kudos
you.
Kudos to you today.
Thank you. All right. You know, let's jump into this now. So the Academy Awards came out... truth be told, when it comes to who was nominated, I don't think there are any big surprises. There wasn't, Nicolas Cage was nominated? I don't think we really had one of those moments. I think most of what we saw, we were expecting. But I do think there are a couple there that surprised me, and in all honesty, disappointed me a little bit that they weren't on there. One of the snubs I had, which... sounds kind of weird because he was already nominated for an Academy Award this year. But Matthew McConaughey is nominated for Dallas Buyers Club for Best Actor. But I truly think that he should have been at least nominated for Best Supporting Actor in Mud.
And this would have been a case where the Academy had an attention span long enough to go all the way back to early 2013.
Yeah, because this came out early 2013. It actually premiered at the Sundance Film Festival last year. And I think when it finally released, I want to say it was March or April is when it finally came out.
Which, if you're wondering why we're not giving you the I, Frankenstein review, Sundance is happening right now, so we're
yeah,
all
there's
over
some
the
other
place.
Stuff going yeah. on. But anyway, McConaughey is phenomenal in that role, and he is. It's just become like a renaissance. They call it the McConaissance, I think.
I've not heard that. That's a good term, though.
I mean, I call it the McConaissance. I came up with that. But he's just made some incredible stuff this year, one of which being Mud, which I think he was just fantastic in. It was a really good film. And you know what? I'm actually bugged that this wasn't even considered for Best Original Screenplay. Because we have these original screenplays that seem so few and far between now. And Mud was a well-told story. It was just interesting, and it really just got no love this year for what I think is one of the best films of the year.
This was a film that I was talking about for days afterwards, and now that you say Best Original Screenplay, I think that's exactly where it fit.
Mm-hmm.
What do we have for Best Original Screenplay if we scroll down really quick?
Probably stuff that's not good.
The Book Thief, which was not critically well received. Gravity, which
I
don't think
how,
was
how,
well
how written. Is The Book Thief? That's a book. How is that original screenplay?
I'm sorry. I'm reading the wrong section.
Okay. I was going to say, this is no.
But John Williams did the score, and he definitely deserves to be nominated
I've
for
actually
that.
Heard the, I haven't seen it, but I have not heard great things about The Book Thief.
Okay. No. Here we go with the real ones. American Hustle for Best Original Screenplay.
Okay.
Blue Jasmine, which I heard was good. Dallas Buyers Club. Her, which, okay, and Nebraska. So I think we could have bumped out Nebraska and threw in.
Well, let me throw this out at you. American Hustle, a good film that had amazing acting in it.
Yeah.
Do I think it's one of the best films of the year? No. Do I think the acting in it was the best acting of the year? Probably. It was phenomenal. Because I put that up, for example, David O. Russell's film last year, Silver Linings Playbook. I don't think it's nearly as good as Silver Linings Playbook as a movie as a whole.
Right.
And so with that said, I think that Cooper getting a nomination, totally legit. Bale, absolutely. He's amazing in it. Amy Adams, absolutely. Jennifer Lawrence, absolutely. Best screenplay, I don't know if it really deserves to be in there for that.
It's almost like Best Original Screenplay is this afterthought. Like, what
yeah.
movies do we have? Okay, let's throw those down there.
Which
as well.
Is unfortunate to me. And then you have like Blue Jasmine, which I haven't seen, but I'm sure it's great. It's Woody Allen. But at the same time, at this point, it seems like it's the kind of thing where a pretty girl likes the guy who pays no attention to her. Because Woody Allen, it's like the Academy's like, no, we want to keep giving you awards. Like, please just show up and
right.
acknowledge it. And it almost seems like, oh, Woody Allen wrote something. Like, yeah, we're going to nominate him for it.
I have seen far more films by Woody Allen that I loathe than I actually enjoy. And that's part of the reason that I haven't seen Blue Jasmine, but I'm told that I'm wrong in my overall perception because of films like Blue Jasmine. So it's on my list of I must see this before the Academy Awards happens, but we weren't able to cover it, and if we don't catch the press screening, then I actually have to pay for it, and that's more difficult.
I don't know now.
Yeah.
But I mean, like Woody Allen, for example, something that I did think he deserved it for was Midnight in Paris. An amazing script. What he put together was fantastic. But at the same time, stuff like Mud, and personally, I know Travis didn't like the film as much as I did, but I think that The Way, Way Back as a screenplay very well could have been in that original screenplay sense as well, how they were able to put everything together there.
Yeah, If anything, I wish they would spend more time looking at best original screenplay and not just selecting from their best picture nods.
Well, and personally, there are certain movies that unfortunately have amazing original screenplays that are never going to get nominated, but one of those to me that was totally snubbed a few years back was Zombieland. Right. I know it seems ridiculous, like, oh, no, that's an Academy Award caliber film. But what we're looking at is original screenplays that are smart. They're clever. They're something that catch you off guard. It's original. And nothing screams that more to me than the screenplay for Zombieland.
Yeah, I agree. And I think if anything, and I haven't really thought about this until this conversation, if anything, that is a category that could really celebrate some of the other films that maybe didn't have the budget or didn't have the push, but that were genuinely good. And it's a way to encourage these screenwriters to keep doing really, really great work that's, you know, a little bit different.
You know, they say there are no original ideas anymore, which is kind of true, but what can you do with those ideas? It's the kind of thing where, this is going to sound totally nerdy, but I just listened to a podcast from Stuff You Should Know about Archimedes. And Archimedes, they talked about, like, he wasn't really an inventor of new things, but he was able to take things that already existed and make them better.
Right.
And I often think that's what an original screenplay is. And I think it misses out on a lot of stuff sometimes. And this is probably the category that drives me nuts more than anything else when it comes to the Academy.
So the real question is, we're probably close to our time limit here. Do we jump straight to Sneakers and forget the Pixar story? Or do we want to?
I forgot about the Pixar story. Darn.
You know what? Maybe we come back to Pixar. Because here's the thing. Pixar and Disney and Star Wars, it's going to come up again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
So in short, it's possible Pixar and Star Wars are going to marry soon and work on a project. Not that Star Wars would be working, but Pixar might work on a Star Wars project. And if you've got some comments on that, we've received some great feedback on KSL.com. But I think, one, it would be more fun to have Matt here on this conversation. And
I think Matt and I would get in a big argument about this conversation.
And I want to see that happen. So let's go ahead and push this off and jump straight into the retro review.
Okay. I'm sorry, everybody. It's the Gray's fault. Liam Neeson. Retro review this week. We're actually both just super excited about this. This is one that I've wanted to do for quite a while. The retro review is something where we take a look at a movie that's kind of an older movie, maybe that you haven't checked out in a while. Travis and I go through the effort of actually watching it and letting you know if it's worth watching again. And this one is worth watching again and again and again. But it's Sneakers, starring Robert Redford, David Strathairn, Sir Ben Kingsley, River Phoenix, Dan Aykroyd. It just seems to go on and on. I loved this movie when I first saw it, and I loved this movie still today.
All right, so here's my story. You told your – well, mine's not so autobiographical per se, but when I first watched Sneakers was when I first started thinking, you know, do I want to be a writer? And it's the first movie that I remember as a young lad looking at and thinking, what would it take to write this? And so as I start watching it, you have these great characters. It starts out – it's so brilliant. It starts out with two characters doing something – really interesting. So interesting that it could have been the entire movie. You know, what they were doing was compelling enough where you could have made a movie just on that.
Mm-hmm.
And you take these two characters and you just slowly expand them to this massive finale with all of these wonderful characters, each one absolutely engaging, absolutely interesting, even the ones that don't have a backstory, like Dan Aykroyd, who all you know is he has problems with the telephone company. Him spouting off his conspiracy theories is really all you get from him. And yet you know there's this whole history that Dan Aykroyd believes, that the director believed. And there's not a character in the film that you don't connect with and believe in. And the fact that they did that with each of the characters, on top of the fact that it was a heist movie and a spy movie with all of these twists and turns, my young brain was just exploding.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, I wonder if maybe I should get in the restaurant business, because this was the first film. And I wasn't really aware of cliches and common plot devices. Mm-hmm. Like the plot device they do with the villain in this is, you know, right out of The Incredibles, which, you know, obviously Sneakers was first, but it's a plot device you see, and it's a really good one, and I always fall for it. But it wasn't like I was like, okay, I've seen that before. Everything to me was new, and my brain was just so numb at the end trying to keep track of what it would take to make a good movie like Sneakers that I've always loved it since then. It's always something I watch over and over again, and when I watch it, I'm picking out new, wonderful things.
It's funny you say this because I'm someone who's always wanted to be a writer. But this movie, there are two movies, Sneakers and Inception, that when I saw them and realized what went into putting a script together, I don't care if you like either of these movies. But from a script standpoint, to put everything together to make it work in those two films, it's mind-boggling, just like Travis said. And it's one of those things where it's just like, I may as well throw my laptop away. You know, right. Why did I spend all this money on Final Draft kind of a thing? But Sneakers, it is so much fun. I mean, it's funny. It's got its serious moments, but it manages to stay light. And there are so many things. I'm not kidding. There are things that happen to me almost on a daily basis that make me think of Sneakers. Right. If I ever hear the word passport, immediately in my mind, I say, my voice is my passport. Verify me. You know, there's just all these things. It is such a great film. And I did not realize this. I mean, I guess time flies, but 92 is when this came out.
I know. It's sad, isn't it?
1992.
I watch this regularly. This is not one of those, oh, I have to go back and look at it. When you said, let's do Sneakers, I was like, let's do Sneakers. You know, sometimes I'm watching the movie literally 10 minutes before I get in the car to come down to make sure that I'm up to speed. But Sneakers was not one of those.
Well, and the thing with Sneakers too, which is interesting, is when it comes down to it, the movie, everything that's like the technology in it is so dated.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it doesn't hurt the film.
No, nothing
from
about
aging.
This
well.
Is such a good movie. There are moments. Let's talk about my one criticism, and I cringe every time these moments happen. There are several moments in the movie, and I have this little fantasy of how it happened. But like the scene where Robert Redford is trying to court Liz into coming back the first time, mm-hmm. and she finally agrees, not because she likes him, but because it's so important. And she walks out, and he goes, "Yes." And it's like just one of those, I always have this fantasy of like these writers around a table and there's the new kid and he's like, maybe we should have him go yes right here. And they're like, oh, well, I don't want to break his heart. All right. Well, but because it's so good. And then out of nowhere, there'll be this moment that just doesn't fit with the movie and is so like corny.
Yeah.
And it's just like, which of the writers came up with this? Because the other guys were doing a fantastic job. And the movie's so good and so well put together that when they do take a moment for Robert Redford to put his hand up in a fist and go, yes, they're just like, wait, who got in and got to throw that one line in on the script? So there are those moments, but aside from those moments, I love that you have a cast this big and this good, and they don't try to go for an Academy Award. They just have a blast. It's kind of like an Ocean's 11 in the sense that they're just like, let's get a big cast together and have a lot of fun with it. And they did.
You know what? It's this kind of a movie that I think even gave birth and gave way to films like Ocean's 11, the modern day Ocean's 11.
Yeah,
at least.
Original Ocean's 11 was not very good.
No, but I mean, it's such a great movie. If you haven't seen it, do yourself a favor and see it. If you have seen it, do yourself a favor and watch it again. It is so much fun. And like I said, what's amazing to me is from 1992, we're looking at 22 years old now. And even though the technology is dated, this movie ages so well.
And another thing before we jump off this, have you ever watched the commentary?
No.
You need to watch the commentary because it's really interesting. There are shots that before people really started doing the long shot, like everyone's talking about the one from Gravity that goes on for like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
There are shots that I never even knew were those long shots in the movie, and they're talking about it. The one scene that specifically I'm talking about is where they're trying to court Robert Redford's character, Martin Bishop, to come back and work for these other guys that you know are seedy. You know there's something up with them.
Right.
And they're talking to him, and he keeps coming up with reasons that he shouldn't do it or that he doesn't feel like he has to do it. And the commentary on it, they're talking about how it starts with a wide shot, that it never cuts, and that the scene becomes more and more claustrophobic as they pin him into a corner so he has to do it. The camera gets tighter, the characters get tighter, and it's probably like a 2 or 3 minute uncut shot that eventually ends up really tight on Robert Redford and those two characters all staring at each other. And it's stuff like that that is just so good and so interesting, and it's throughout the whole film that keeps it where it's still a relevant movie. Filmmakers can watch it and be impressed. Screenplay wannabes like John. I was going to say me, but I haven't actually tried a screenplay. They just get exhausted looking at it. It is still a really genuinely good, totally modern film that you can watch and study.
Yeah. Great movie. Take a look at it again or take a look at it for the first time, depending on where you are. But we've gone on way too long today. We should wrap this up. But thank you, everybody, for checking us out. Make sure you tune in next week, where we actually have a great opportunity for you to win some awesome stuff and also get your brand out there. We're actually hoping to promote you guys as listeners.
We are. And also, if you have a retro review, we're also giving away movie tickets still and That's t-shirts. Right. So hit us up either on Facebook or on Twitter. If it's on Twitter, hit us at FlixJunkies, F-L-I-C-K-S, Junkies. Tell us what movie you would like us to do, just like Sneakers today. We'll go watch it, tell you if it's still relevant.
Yeah, and just hit us with the hashtag retro review, and we'll check that out. Thank you so much to all of you. For Matt Glade, who unfortunately is not in studio, and Travis Poppleton, I'm John Clyde. We are the Flix Junkies, and we look forward to seeing you guys next time.